What do you use mixing pots for?
What do I use mixing pots for? Oh, what do you use mixing pots for?
There's no way to there's no good way to bring it up except for the fact that we weren't recording, but we were talking about SMS, the mixing bottles.
Their mixing bottles they're 30 mil mixing bottles, and they're awesome. They're so freaking useful. But
why do you use them? You don't use them for paint.
I fill mine with whiskey. I got little bottles of different whiskeys on my workbench.
He's got a little distillery.
Dude, and they got like a little, if you order their mixing bottles, they got like a little label on them, a little label.
At the time
of recording, I have not been partaking in my mixing bottles, I swear. I write what kind of whiskey is on the bottle on the little label. So it's like, hey. So like, I've got a Scotch bottle and a bourbon bottle. I haven't put rye in one yet, but they're very useful.
I'm too busy drinking the rye. I couldn't do that.
I would love to see you like on fucking Twitch or some shit streaming, and then just all of a sudden you just take an SMS bottle and just down it real fucking quick.
What was that? That was burnt umber. Let's move on.
That's a color shifting in my belly now.
It color shifts your innards, man. It's real good for you.
That's what it does. That's what
cleans you out.
I did have, I think, one time on Twitch, because what I would do is I put my devil's lettuce in the Tamiya mixing pots, like the big ones.
Dude, it's airtight.
It's airtight. Yeah, and it looks fucking dope. It looks cool. It looks cool. Like you're sitting there having this, you're like, oh shit. Yeah, but I mean. That should be like the new market. That's going to be like the new, like, weird fucking douchebag, like, craft beer market where we sell your favorite hobby paints, but it's just little shots of vodka.
It's a solvent of some kind. Honestly, ethanol is a solvent.
It'll work on certain stuff.
Yeah, I wouldn't strip it will.
It'll make you strip.
Kind of strip.
There you go.
Yep.
Different kind of stripping. Well, that was fun. Good times.
All right, thanks for listening to this podcast.
That's great. That's all for season two. See you guys. Bye.
Man, Premonition to Paint season two is really short.
Record time.
We're so efficient, you guys. Our listeners are probably like super proud of us. This is why we win so many awards, by the way. Permission to Paint has won the Siberian podcasters, Polar Bear's favorite podcast.
Oh, Polar my Bears God.
That was just because they got some photos of us, though. That got awkward.
Yeah, I think they just associated the podcast with their photos. Not so much the podcast itself.
Look at these guys. Look at these. Bears. I did.
Didn't we win the Tinfoil Demon Award?
The tinfoil. They wouldn't give us golden, silver, bronze, or there were a couple of other. There's one that was actually tin. We also didn't get the aluminum one.
No,
tin foil is like the bathroom floor quality of the golden demons.
So of your miniature podcasting,
I'm happy to wish though. So it'd be like aluminium demon. So that'd just be fun to say.
Aluminium demon, daemon.
Right.
Aluminium demon.
Aluminium.
They gave us the acrylic gold demon.
I'll take it.
It's not worth its weight in gold, but you know, it's there.
It's worth its weight in the stuff that dries up around your citadel pots, you know?
Yeah. We're like this podcast is like the crusty rim on your citadel metallic paint every time you open it up and you peel it off in a ring and you put it on your finger and be like, all right.
Guys, I got this. I know exactly what we're going to do. Are you ready?
I was born for this.
Welcome to our podcast, The Crusty Ring. Let's roll the intro music. Here we are. Welcome to Premonition of Paint, aka The Crusty Ring, aka the Ricky's Truck Nuts Emporium. I think we've been using that name for a little while. We got the website at least, so that's really all that matters. Yeah. Yep. We are now in season three of Premonition of Paint, aren't we?
Season two.
Oh, you're right. We're one season behind two. The cutting mat. Yeah. Season two was canceled, so I think we're going to skip straight.
The
marketing department.
Three. I'm good with that.
Right. Our marketing department was very clear about this. Season two. Season three.
It wasn't our greatest showing. Yeah. I mean, well, now we've got parody, so that's good.
We've got a team of crack lawyers. We got a marketing department that, you know, doesn't really care about season two, but here we are. Just like our new season of the Cutting Mat podcast, we are going to start the season out by talking about how to get started in our hobby and how we got started in our hobby. But before we get started, let's get started by getting started. And I want to get started by starting with Phil. Start. Why don't you start and get started and introduce and get started.
So we're doing like chronological order here. So in the dark days of 1989, I didn't actually start painting until I was aware of mini stuff back then, but
goddamn, Phil, I was born in 89. Jesus.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't get a hold of a lot of this stuff.
That makes you 160 years old. Is that right?
Yeah. Just about.
Yep. No, wait, 158. I was off by.
You were close enough. I'm okay with rounding up, but probably like 93, 94, I think was when I started. And, if we're just talking specifically about mini stuff, then I was really interested in Warhammer 40,000 at the time. I was interested in it because my other nerdy friends had older nerdy siblings that had books that I couldn't afford.
Yep.
And among them were the really old, awesome, like Rogue Trader source books. And I fell in love with all the orc imagery that was in like the Wog the Orcs books and all that stuff. So like Paul Bonner and Paul Bonner and Wayne England, a lot of those guys, really impressed me. So I kind of fell in love with that stuff. And as soon as I could afford any miniatures, which was coincidentally right around the time that second edition came out, I got a hold of the box set for second edition 40K and a whole bunch of orcs. And I started painting them constantly. And I was really, really bad. And I stayed that way for many, many years. But I enjoyed it. So that became kind of my favorite thing to do in my downtime. So I guess that's how I got started.
Nice.
Like, what do we want to know exactly?
I mean, I think that's basically, like, we'll talk about how we got started, but then we'll kind of talk about what we wish we did differently also. I think that's going to be useful.
Cool. Well, that's how I got going. Who's next?
Yeah, dude.
Brandon would be next, I guess.
It is me, because mine was like in 99, 2000, like in that area. And I remember, similarly, Warhammer 40K is how I started out, and it was on the school bus, and it was looking at codexes. And I remember specifically, you know, that's basically, that's where it is. You know, we basically, a couple of guys in the school bus had a Chaos Space Marines codex, and it was the coolest. The art was freaking awesome.
Yeah, and so, that was cool.
Man.
So fucking dope.
That would have been second edition. So yeah, that would have been Mark Gibbons was doing a lot of the artwork in that one. He was, he was awesome, especially then. Like, he was a real breath of fresh air.
So. Oh man! Well, even after second edition, I remember that when third edition came out shortly thereafter, that was kind of when I got into it at the beginning of third, because the first codex I owned and the first army I started was Eldar, third edition Eldar, the old Gav Thorpe codex, and it was just the art was fantastic, but I loved the models. Like, I was into like this kind of sci-fi hovering tanks. That was all totally me. I was awful. I was the worst painter in the world. Like, for me, I played Ulthway Eldar. I had a battle force, so I had like a Falcon and like a couple of Guardians and some Dire Avengers, I think, came with the battle force back in third. And I painted the Dire Avengers.
You got like the battle force box.
Yeah, man. It was like the first time those things came out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, it was, except like, how useful were those? There was an issue with third edition Eldar, which could be its own podcast, I think. But the way I painted them up was its own issue. And since Ulthway back then just sort of had like a black armor and an orange helmet, orangish yellow helmet on Guardians, I'm thinking, okay, cool. I can like save some time and just prime these guys black and paint their helmets yellow and boom, like super quick. Cause I didn't know what highlighting was. Like, I didn't understand any of these simple, concepts, which I consider now to be important. The basics. Well,
like, you were probably trying to paint yellow over black too. Weren't you?
And I used enamels because I figured out that that the yellow enamel covered so much better than yellow acrylics.
Right.
So, you know, I actually did tests back then and found out, oh, yeah, the enamels cover the black better. I'm going to use the enamel. Because that was the only consideration I had. It was such a strange time.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Like, I didn't learn how to paint yellow until like a few years ago, and I've been doing this for like 25 years.
I learned how to paint yellow 4 years ago, and I remember it because I'm like, holy shit, like, that's what Averland Sunset's for. You know, like, what?
Yeah. No, the discovery of ochre is a life-changing event.
Ochre's so awesome. And I used, if you're a Gunpla fan and you check out mechagenre.com, you can see the fin on the Barzam that I built. The fin is shaded using that ochre technique, which I developed from painting miniatures. So these two things are so closely related, and the techniques and like the everything is connected. It's all connected.
Oh, yeah. It's all a series of tubes.
It's the internet is a series of tubes. Miniature painting is not a big truck. You can't just dump something.
You can paint anything the same way you paint one thing. Anything can be extrapolated out to any other subject. So that works out well.
And if you're talking to Phil, he can also relate miniature painting to fixing your life problems also. And so Phil is like a miniature painting doctor. It's an amazing. I don't know how this happened. So, but that's a sort of a tangent. You mentioned that, you know, you can paint one thing, you can paint anything. I usually end up painting my thumb. That's what usually happens. But
I have very colorful thumbs by the end of any job. Yeah,
exactly. But I started so long ago that it's not like it's hardly relevant to the environment today. But Joel, I want to hear how you started, because that's going to be like
it's like a year ago, the year 2 years ago.
Oh, is that long ago, man?
Yeah, I mean, now it is with the pandemic and all that. That felt like it was, you know, just yesterday.
The last year was the longest decade of my life.
Yeah, exactly. I remember kind of like the Gunpla intro story that we had on that episode. During that time period, when I was playing in bands, we got a War Machine box, and like, that lasted a whole like one night, and then we're like, I don't have fucking time for this. But going to Hangar 18, pretty much Hangar 18 is how I got into like really seeing miniatures and like seeing people play the games, like learning about paint techniques. And
that's that's your local hobby hangout,
yeah,
right?
That's our local spot, Hangar 18 Hobbies.
Brick and mortar places have always been like, you know, they're still highly relevant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, if anyone was to be like, hey, what should I do to go learn, you know, paint miniatures? Like, you have a hobby store around you? You have a games workshop? Yeah, just go there.
The answer.
They'll show you all this cool shit in person that you're not going to really like fully get to see every little nook and cranny online. But my segue into it was through Hangar 18. The owner Brian was showing me a lot of stuff he was working on, because he was painting in the store, which was cool because like you come in and like see the things being painted that you can just go turn around quite literally and just pick it off the shelf and buy it. So I mean, between that, I picked up like a random chaos, like one of the free chaos space marines, just like Gundam. I got fucking hooked in the marketing team's like perfect demographic. I walked into a hobby store where they sold Game Workshop products. They gave me a free space marine sprue. I went, oh, golly gee willikers, I can't wait to paint this. And I put it together, and then I painted it like shit, and then I brought it in, and I was like, oh, look, I did the thing. And they're like, dope, buy more crack. And that's how I got started.
Crack.
Yeah, and then there was an unfortunate, I think we talked about this in some older pod episode, where one of the longtime patrons of the store passed away and left a lot of Warhammer items and miniatures to us at the store. So I inherited a very large collection that I'm still haven't even touched the surface of yet. I'm going through and just practicing painting a bunch of stuff that was pre-built and already primed, just to kind of have fun and just learn shit from there. So like, I just technically built, I've snapped some Warhammer models like when I first got into it at the very beginning, but last week is the first time I actually like sat down and like really hyper focused on getting rid of every, you know, full seam line removal, the whole nine yards, filling seams, putty, all of it was like last week. I did that on an orc. Just awesome. just one fucking orc out of like a bagillion that I have sitting on spruce.
That's the thing though. Orcs. I mean, First off, I mean, obviously it's terrible that you lost your friend, but that's pretty amazing that as a hobby nerd, you know, that somebody left their nerd hoard to their local nerds. Like, I mean, that's, dude, phenomenal. Like,
that's a legacy, man.
He got so much. Of us.
Yeah. There's so much that you can learn from just a random pile of stuff that it normally takes most people years and years to accumulate. So it's awesome that he helped you kind of hit the fast forward button on that. That's a hell of a gift.
Yeah, and the cool thing is like he got really a lot of us into miniatures, but like not even just like I don't play any games. I just the only miniature tabletop game I've played and would play like after COVID or after COVID would be like X-Wing, which is like space combat miniature game. Yeah, you can paint those, but they're pre-painted.
I've painted X-Wing minis. They actually take paint pretty well.
They do. I like them because you don't have to paint them. They do. Right. They look fine. Yeah.
And then Shadespire, which is like the card/mini game that we played, that and that was kind of fun. But
they're nice minis too. I like
40k is just too much for me. I'm sure there's people that are kind of bummed to hear about it. I failed fucking math. Like, I can't do all that shit. I can't remember all that shit. Like, well, I just want to paint and make it look cool. I'll paint your army, I guess, or something, but I ain't fucking playing it.
You know, it amazes me about that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say it's so easy to play. You just need a bucket of dice. That's how 40k is played.
That's what it seems like. But then you gotta remember that dice does that one. That dice does something else on Tuesdays. But you're playing on a Thursday, so you gotta use these two other dice. Yeah, it's kind of like
the
that.
The games are weird. Like first off, I'm like amazed because I feel like you now. Like when I look at the games, because I'm just like, I haven't played these in forever. Like I've been pretty much solely a mini painter, not so much a gamer, for years and years and years and years. But like every once in a while I get a wild hair. I'm like, hey, you know, Nora's almost old enough to play one of these. Maybe she'd get a kick out of it. So grab a bunch of the dudes and put them together and then look over a rule set. And I'm like, how the fuck did I ever remember all right, this stuff?
I know. Like was it actually simpler? Was it simpler back then and it got more complicated?
It was more objectively more complicated back then.
My whiskey addled mind just can't doing handle it wrong. It's possible that we may have been doing it wrong. Like I was giving my opponents Hormagaunts way too many attacks. That's probably actually highly likely. Ugh.
But that's kind of cool too. I mean, that's almost a different subject where it's like, Is the game the rules? Is the game the interaction? Yes, is the game the
question?
Where I'm just like, I'd rather play with somebody that's like, okay, it makes sense that this guy would be going batshit on your face with his axe right now. Yeah, so that's obviously happening. Who gives a shit what the rule book says? You're like, that's the guy I want to play with, you know? But
see, to some extent, RPGs like D&D can do that. You can paint minis for D&D as well. Totally. Like I paint every mini every mini for every character that I play in an RPG. Yeah. That's one of the best things about making a character.
Yeah.
It's honestly, that's something that I was going to do. And then my first D&D game, but an IRL D&D game that got canceled, but I was planning to paint everyone's like characters. Cause you get to know the character a little bit more, like, that kind
of thing. It's a meditative, it's fun as fuck. You can laugh at it cause it's silly. I mean, all of it's silly. You know,
it's all like, silly,
but it's a meditative process sitting there and like working on making something look right. And if you're sitting there thinking about what you're working on the whole time, it does kind of, it makes it more real.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's how I got started. It wasn't, and the thing, like you were talking about, Brandon, for me, my favorite part of miniatures is that I've learned painting techniques from miniature painters like YouTube, like Miniat and Scott and all those dudes, and took those direct methods to Gundam medium, like dry brushing and shit like that, to where I honestly like hand painting Gundam kits more because of it's the same techniques and miniatures. So I know if I'm painting one or the other, I can take those skills directly to those both things that I do. And even translates to toy painting too, because some of the stuff I do is hand painted. So like, it's just, and airbrushing is really good and it's used in miniatures. I've actually been fucking around with it a little bit with like inks and shit. and it's kind of a different ball game than Gundam stuff, but it's a still a skill set. You still have to clean your airbrush the same way after.
Well, yes, you do.
Yep. Shit like that. So
anything three dimensional is going to have, you know, similar applications for anything if you choose to use them that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And it looks great on all of them. Like it's right. there's way more, like, I guess Brando would call it meta issues there than anything else. It's there's way more like what other people that work on it would consider to be an appropriate style for that subject or whatever. Stupid which is expectations, nonsense.
Right?
Like. It's just like you're saying, if you learn how to paint a miniature well, you can use all those cool tricks on a gunpla. It's going to look fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's going to look dope as shit.
Yeah,
people are going to clown you because they're dumb, but
they fuck are
because you just made something awesome. So
100%. Yeah, exactly. That's what the permission to paint T-shirt means. That means fuck them.
And 9 times out of 10, you're just having fun doing it too. That's the priority, you know, of doing it. So,
and like there are some things that I love doing on a miniature that I don't love doing on a gunpla, so I don't do those things.
Yep.
So yeah, the pursuit of fun should always be priority one. Like that's
it what has you're to after. Be. It's a hobby. Like this was a very heavily reinforced topic on the Cutting Mat and Permission of Paint in the previous seasons, and honestly, like forever, we will always reinforce this topic. You're supposed to have fun with your hobbies. So who cares what anybody else says, right? If you're just starting out in miniature painting, I remember being very self-conscious because I was really bad at it. And so I didn't want to show my miniatures to anybody else, but who cares? I know now I shouldn't have cared about that.
That's a huge thing. I mean, I sometimes still feel like that. I feel comfortable sharing it like in the Discords and shit because I know y'all don't care. But like, for a lot of people, because Instagram and shit's such a thing and social media such a thing that
it's like part of that evil meta.
Yeah, they want to make sure it's like, you know, high res, top quality, final product shot. Was like, nah, dude, I want to see the weird in between because that's how I'm gonna go, oh shit, that's how you do that.
Oh yeah, you'll learn way more from a whip than you will from, you know, a studio grade photo, which nobody knows how to take anyway. So, you know, who cares?
But we're all just faking it.
Joel actually knows how to do that.
I don't do it with minis though. So
I've been doing this for a quarter century. And when I finish my mini, I'm like, just grab it, hold it up under my desk lamp, still on the, you know, miniature holder, just like snap with the phone. All right, there it goes. I finished it. See y'all later. You
know? Look at the miniature.
Once in a while I'll try to take a nice one or whatever, but I do so few things that I'm like, this is really nice that I try and showcase it like that.
Painted.
But, yeah, seriously. Yeah. Look at what I did. You know, then meanwhile, like there's one guy on like my personal Discord that's like, he's a commissioned army painter. Like his individual minis and like individual models are solid. You know, they're nothing that like change the way you work from looking at them or anything.
Well,
but in the time it takes me to do one thing, he's literally painted an entire army and it looks fucking great.
That's, so there's always like, that iron triangle. It's the, you know, the time.
Everybody's
the quality,
got their workflow.
The, Well, if you're just so I want to shift the gear back over to starting out.
The gears. Sorry.
Gears, the shifts, moving the shifty gears. So like. We're talking about airbrushing. We're talking about learning from online. All of these things are really good. The first piece of advice from that conversation that I think that we should give to people who are starting out is apply what you learn from one of your hobbies to other hobbies, because it's all connected. It all applies.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And show off your work, no matter how you think it looks.
Like at don't every be afraid stage.
To, yeah, don't be afraid to show off your earliest stages. That's how you get advice from other people, and that's how you get better. That's really important. I didn't have that, and it took me a really long time to develop as a miniature painter. So take that advantage of that when you can.
And that's also
go ahead.
Oh my God, you're too kind, Phil.
I was just gonna say that's one of the reasons I like Joel's story so much, and yours to, you know, a similar degree, where like when I was learning it, like I didn't have anybody. I didn't have a local. I eventually did. Well, yeah, my family moved around a lot when I was younger, but when I first started there, I didn't have a local. Like I had to drive like 4 hours away to buy that box. It was my birthday present. Like that was like a big deal, but like, you know, all I had was like White Dwarf, which was, you know, studio finished photos of everything. There were no tutorials. There was no fucking internet. There was no broadband, you know, like I had no support. I was just literally figuring it all out as much as I could.
You know, from when you wanted blue paint, you had to crush up a bunch of blueberries. You wanted red paint, you had to catch a bunch of those little bugs and crush all those up and then mix them with your thinner. Like, things were rough back then. Do you ever use grass stains for your green paints, Phil?
That actually kind of segues nicely into the second bit of advice that I would give to somebody that was just getting started out, which is always grind your own paint from minerals you find in your yard. When I started, there were lots and lots of pre-made hobby brands of paint available or what. Well, not lots, but there was enough out there that you could get some.
Were at least three. I remember there were at least three. Now there are dozens, but
I both didn't have any money back then to order things if I had known where to order them from, which I didn't. And I didn't have a local, so I didn't have any hobby paints where I was. So I learned how to paint with craft paints from Walmart, and learning how to use those semi-proficiently. Like, eventually, it's nice to have something that's formulated for your job or whatever. But when you use other things other than what's being sold to you, you start to understand the actual properties of the paint and how they work and how they're made and what they do. And when you understand that, you understand when you're being fed a line of horseshit by a marketing team. So that my second piece of advice would be, don't necessarily think that you have to buy the shit that's quote unquote made for what you want to do, because there is a ton of it out there now and it's crazy overpriced, and some of it's amazing. Some of it you'd never ever need.
I mean, I can tell a difference, but I think the reason why I can tell a difference between those hobby specific brands and the craft brand is because I know what I'm trying to do. You know, when I was first starting out, those Apple Barrel or whatever craft paints from the hobbies, you know, from the craft stores worked fine for me because I was still learning brush control. You know, like I was still learning paint dilutions, these really simple fundamental concepts that you have to start with before you can know whether you like the hobby. Because that's another really major key, and it's something that we touched on in the cutting mat. You want to find out if you like the hobby, right?
And
if you don't know whether you want to paint miniatures or not, you shouldn't spend like $4 a paint pot on hobby paints when you can spend 35 to 50 cents per color at a craft store. You know, paint is paint for the most part.
I'm even because like I guess I'm the young generation in this fucking scenario. But I like Gundam, you know, they had the build of, you know, the kit that came with like the Gundam marker and the book and all that shit. I hate saying it. Game Workshop's like, yeah, good. We got you, boy. I really liked the sets that would come with like three minis, a bunch of different small things of paints, like two brushes.
Oh, and then
when I remember there was a hobby store that I went to before Hangar 18 that kind of like offered that. And he threw in like two or three just, you know, cheap brushes that were just different sizes. Oh, and he was like, use this one for your big things, use this for your small things, and just try to learn how it works.
That's awesome.
And I was like, I didn't get it. But when my friends got it, and he was like, it was awesome. And he got fucking hooked on it because like that hobby store took the time to kind of be like, yeah, it's a marketing thing, but like, if you just want to give it one shot, here's everything you need in one little box for like $40.
Well, and that's the cool thing about mini painting too, is that just like any hobby, it can get astronomically expensive as you get, you know, the perfect thing made for job X or whatever. But all you need is realistically, you could get five colors and never need another one.
We all have a billion
pots of paint, but you could get away with that. A couple of different brushes and some water.
Yes.
And some minis, and that's all you need. Water, like, that's all you need.
You need dihydrogen monoxide. That's the best type of water. You should really try to find pure, certified dihydrogen monoxide. Those paint kits, if I remember correctly, Joel, they came with several miniatures and a bunch of miniature. Like they weren't full paint pots.
They weren't full. So they had two different ones.
Itty bitty tiny paint pots.
Yeah.
I turned down the miniature Necron, the one that came with a miniature, but you could buy the like Necron paint set for $15.
Right.
I bought that paint set for Gundam shit and I used that for like a year.
Yeah.
Because it had all kinds of metallics and like greens and weird colors and like discount shades and paints. Shit.
Yep.
Oh man, that shit, that's fucking dope. And I think that's that we always talk about on this show a little bit of like differences between Plamo, Gunpla, scale modeling and miniatures, because while they are very similar, they are also very different. Mm-hmm. But I think that's something, if, you know, say Bandai was to offer up, you know, a starter pack or some shit that had, you know, a kit, some type of paint applique. It could even be a $200 fucking starter pack that has an airbrush or some shit in it. That'd I don't cool. fucking know how they would do it. But like, you know, they did they kind of hit that perfect thing with having the Gundam kit with the Gundam marker and explaining mm-hmm. how to use the Gundam marker. Because when we brought those in at Hangar 18 and did a couple workshops, those people that were just like, oh, cool, this is out of the box, brand new people were panel lining on their first ever fucking kit because it was presented to them that way. And it's some of the weird things, like we always talk about how miniatures, you're presented with painting from the get-go.
Right. But
with Gunpla, it's like this advanced thing that you have to take a workshop to learn how to paint. Yep. Which is kind of weird, because there's also things in miniatures that they treat like that. That's like, you know, easy as shit, you know, in other mediums and hobbies.
Right. Right.
So like, my biggest piece as advice, as you know, for getting into it, is don't get overwhelmed with all the what ifs and what you can do. Just keep it basic. And there is so much, I mean, compared to Gunpla, the YouTube content quality and amount of information on there that's presented in aesthetic or design choice or person that you want it to have it done by, it's been done. Right. And it's been done well.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Gunpla, there's all kinds of videos out there, and some of them are good, but the quality is perfect.
And even then, you know, some of the Gunpla videos are just wrong. Like, some of them are actually incorrect.
Yeah, some of them, there's a lot of wrong information.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
The mini stuff is on another level, though. Like, I we didn't have YouTube, Phil and I. We didn't have, you know, these painting videos when we first started out. So use those resources, like freaking use them. The I remember specifically, I went to Origins Game Fair in 2008. Yeah. Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio. And I went to one of their mini painting seminars. And that was when I really realized, hey, wait a minute, I can understand highlighting.
And that was it. That was like, unless that was happening locally, I'm sure that's all you had.
Oh, yeah, of course. And there weren't, like, I had local game stores, but they didn't have paint workshops.
So this is probably me. This is me being younger, but of the generation of like buying VHS and tapes and shit of, you know, stuff online. Was there like miniature painting videos that you could buy a DVD of or a VHS?
Heavy Metal VHS. Yeah,
you could buy that. Wait,
even that.
Heavy Metal had a VHS?
Did they? I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure they did. Let me see if I can find.
They might have. Yeah.
Oh my god! Right, I'm with two. Oh my god!
Now, for when I first became aware of, like, you know, the tapes and DVDs and shit and all that, was when the competition mini painting started moving beyond like Golden Demon, and there started being more like independent, like high profile painting competitions,
like underground painting competitions.
Yeah, it was mostly like Fight Club. No,
we can't talk about those painting competitions.
No, it was like the first like not GW painting competition that I was aware of, because make no mistake, at one point G-Dubs had like the lockdown on anything having to do with their output, just like Bandai does, you know.
It
got too big for them to contain. But when that first started to happen, like smaller companies like Privateer offered the first one for a decent chunk of change that I was aware of. Like Privateer at Gen Con offered like $2,000 one year.
Holy shit.
Well, that was like War Machine was making money hand over fist, because at the time everybody was pissed off at G-Dubs and the company was growing exponentially like every 5 minutes.
Honestly, but good strategy. That's a whole other topic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they rode fucking wave.
We kind of covered that in season one, honestly.
We touched it.
I would love an episode.
That's a hell of a story, really.
I would love an episode just hearing mainly you guys, it's gonna be you two guys talking to me reacting, but like hearing about how, because like I can tell you for hours about every Gunpla and, you know, scale modeling event I've been to in the United States in the past 4 years, but like I want to hear about what the miniature shit was back in the fucking day of VHS painting tapes, $2,000 painting competitions, Fight Club.
Well, that's the thing. Like that first one, like I said, there were probably other ones. I've never been that much of like a social nerd. Like I've become way more of a social nerd in recent years because I was bored.
I'm still not a social nerd.
To do. But like the first one that I was aware of was that would have been like early 2000s, I guess, when that happened. And that was Jen Haley won it. And I'd already seen Jen Haley's painting and she was awesome. And like, I got my first set of Series 7 brushes because of an article she wrote for some magazine that got published in like bad text format on a message board. Like,
yes,
this is the secret weapon right here. I got some Series 7s now. Like, she's why I sit my brushes sideways, you know, like Jen Haley's an amazing painter. She's the head judge at Crystal Brush. But either way,
sorry, not to interrupt you, but I would love to, I'm just getting ideas and I'm sure people are like, fuck, I want to hear about that too. We should do a little bit. I'm sure Phil and Brandon, of course, you're going to be the heads on this, but a little bit of a history to kind of like what sounds like the weird, like punk zine thing happening Warhammer that was back then. Cause that sounds fucking awesome.
I could start it out that way.
Well, it started out that way.
And that's how it all starts. Super 7 started that way too. But you know,
I mean, it was like that for a while. When I joined up, it was starting the corporatization phase. So I could talk more about the dark times. The dark times, basically. Well, my perspective would be the dark times. Phil could talk about the like early punk zine era. With the corporatization phase, the real key there is it's the rise and fall, and it is a tale of hubris. And it is a tale of stupid ass marketing decisions that resulted in the prices in different regions being different and people getting angry and then going to privateer press. So, yeah, that would be an interesting story, I think. But people who are starting out don't need to know that.
The history of it, they don't. I mean, God, we're all over the damn map as usual.
Because it's honestly a different company now. And I can say that the Games Workshop that I see now in stores is unrecognizable.
They hired a good PR team. They're still hiking prices every five fucking minutes.
They are, and that's kind of why
my own feelings on
that's
that,
why I wanted to mention the prices. Like the paints are expensive. Yeah. They're good, but really, like if you start out,
The people don't have to just do Games Workshop. That's something I was going to bring up too for new people coming in. Is that
it's not just GDA.
So many companies, and if you got a homie that has a resin printer, they can print you a miniature.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just try for real. See if you like it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of companies. You don't have to invest anything.
Yeah, you can really just, I mean, honestly, too, if you know someone local, like if you have a friend or some shit local, or even someone online that paints miniatures, if you just ask them, say, hey, I'm kind of interested in this, 9 times out of 10, they'll be like, I'm going to send you this and you're going to do this and check this out. Here's some free shit.
Or at the very least, just be like, yo, just come paint with me sometime.
Yeah, you know? Or go hang out with them.
Yeah, turn on Discord. You can paint and hang out with me. Point your webcam at your hands, you know? Like, we're all dorks. Like, we, especially during COVID, like, hopefully that's, you know, by the time this gets out there, that's going to start being less, a little bit of an issue. But it can be a social hobby. Like it can be very, very solitary, and it's good for people that like both because you can always grab a handful of things and go to the store and paint with buddies.
I personally
love Discord because you don't have to take anything anywhere. You can paint with your buddies.
Using all your stuff where it sits. A key part of starting out in this hobby is that you can do it on your kitchen table or you can designate a workbench.
Yeah, you don't need a huge fucking workshop. Or even...
you don't have to be me. I've been doing this longer than most of you have been alive. That's why I have that stupid room.
Well, but like how do you... I want to talk a bit about how to set up that initial work area because that was, for me, that was a big piece in making me a better painter. And just getting me to do the hobby more, because with an inefficient workspace, it's just less fun. You get a lower quality output, you know?
Real talk, for me, the only things you need are just enough space to sit comfortably at a chair that, you know, hopefully is, you know, putting you in a position where you don't have to crouch too much because you're going to be sitting there a while doing this. And then you need, you know, whatever paints you're working on, you need to be able to keep them to hand, but you don't want to have so many that they're all over the place. Just to keep it tidy because space is important.
Oh, my
but the most important things to have on your table, well, everybody's does, but, you know, ideally when you sit down, having it not be a war zone is a great place to start. It's more motivating to most people to not sit down to a complete disaster.
Yeah, true.
So what you need more than anything, you need your paint. Like I said, a few will do it. Don't go crazy. You need, a rinse cup. I like an old coffee mug. You need two lamps. The reason for that is that they're going to cancel out shadows. That's a big, hard thing when you're working on small things for the first time. Having two nice, bright, cheapo $5 desk lamps will be a huge, huge, huge problem solver
for you. You'll use them for life, too.
Yep. Just point them at opposing angles, about 60 degrees at your hands. You won't have any shadows. You'll be able to paint it just like you're painting something under full sunlight. It's awesome. A couple of brushes, a well-made brush. You know, a well-made brush in the beginning doesn't even matter. You're not going to have any idea how to use it, so don't spend money. Just get something that's got a nice point on it. You're good. Yeah. It's like a size 0 and a size 1. That's all you need.
And I recommend a size 0 and a size 2. And if you can, like a 3-0 spotter or something, like, you know, you can buy again, a set
from any hobby store for like $2. They're fine.
Like as you learn what makes a brush the way that you like it and the things you like about a brush, you'll be able to start spending money on nice ones. But until you have those preferences, there's no point.
The key is like until you're learning, you're still.
When they say 0, they mean a different thing when they say 1. The God's honest truth is that on a well-made brush, the tip of a 000 is the same size as the tip on a number 3.
Yes,
the tip on a 3, you know, it's like it's a point, you know. So it's the whole like use the size 20/0 brush is nonsense.
You don't need that.
Paint's just going to dry on your brush. Anyway, so you need a couple of lamps, a couple of brushes, some paint, a rinse cup, and you need a wet palette. I wish to God I had got one of those right when I first got started. It completely changed the way I painted. It saves me insane amounts of money every year. You can get a nice one or you can make one out of a sandwich tub. Uncle Adam has a tutorial video on his YouTube channel, Tabletop Minions, that'll walk you through how to make a wet palette from a Gladware sandwich tub.
So what's his, is he using the parchment paper method?
Yep, parchment paper over wet paper towels in an airtight container. That's all a wet palette is.
Yeah, and more complicated even than I would recommend. Like if you start out with a wet palette, that's fantastic. But if you're trying to figure out if you like the hobby, I use styrofoam plates as palettes because they are cheap.
Yeah.
And if you don't like painting, you have a bunch of plates you can use for actual sandwiches.
You can make lunch real good.
Boom, lunch.
I mean, the only reason I suggest a wet palette as starting equipment is that, like I said, it makes the paint fundamentally easier to work with, and it makes concepts like dilution and coverage and transparency and all it makes all the tricky stuff way easier to observe and predict.
Yep. So you guys never,
and it just saves insane amounts of money. Like you waste so much less paint.
You guys didn't, obviously when you got started, you didn't have YouTube and shit like that.
Nope.
And I do, and I hate it, but one of my favorite things to do is I love watching miniature YouTube videos more than Gundam videos. Yeah. One, I make Gundam videos, and two, there's not a lot of different content out there.
No, there's not.
Miniatures, some of my favorite videos that I feel like a trash person are some of the clickbaity ones of like, top, like I watched one from Squidmar minis that was like top 5 things I wish I knew when I got started. And the thing is, I found a bunch of other miniature videos, content creators making the same videos. All of them across the board were like wet palette. I swear to fucking God, I wish I had a wet palette.
It's not a joke. Like it's
wild.
I just started using one about 5 years ago, which means for 20 years I was wasting insane amounts of paint. So much money I've blown.
You know, if you walk away and then you come back, you have to remix the same color again to finish your highlights. It's such a pain.
And the thing is, too, if you're like myself, that I just, you know, I enjoy buying hobby products that I know I can make myself. I don't know why. I'm a bastard, but like, I like having like the company thing because, you know, they're trying to stay afloat and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I walked into a local store here in Raleigh, Game Theory. They sell all kinds of miniatures and like Magic and Pokemon cards and shit like that. And they had the Army Painter wet palette there. And yeah. I mean, the one I had before was the one you get at like an art store. So it's huge. And this one's much smaller.
Right.
And no, it's a
direct ripoff of the Redgrass palette.
Yeah. And it worked fine. Yeah. There's, you know, it was like 10, 20 bucks or some shit. It wasn't even that much. It was pretty cheap. Yeah. But the cool thing was that they had it out with all their like beginner stuff.
Yep.
And like, this is highly recommended from.
I'm glad that they do.
Yeah. This is
not that it's the Army Painter one, but I'm glad that they do.
Just, yeah. Just that's the concept the only of starting one out with a wet palette. Yeah.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not trying to overcomplicate things for a new person at all by saying that. Like, that's by far the most, you know, fancy. Yeah. Piece of equipment in that list I just rattled off, and like I said, you can make it out of a sandwich tub.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not really that fancy at all. Yeah,
if anybody in your house bakes, you have everything you need to make that thing in your house right now.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah,
or
which is how I made mine.
And you say you buy parchment paper and you take a sheet and you leave it there, and then like your roommate, your girlfriend sees it and they're like, maybe I should bake. You've encouraged them on a new hobby. There you go.
Just got brownies. You just actually got brownies.
I use parchment paper for I use it to roast vegetables also. So honestly, parchment paper is a must have in your kitchen. But this isn't premonition of kitchen.
If you like to draw, you can use it for tracing paper. It's you can use vellum on a wet palette if you have to. Like, that's right. Everything connects. No hobby is in a vacuum.
It's all connected.
It's all connected
stuff. If it is your first time sitting down to paint a miniature, I would say no. But if you like painting, that should be one of your first upgrades. A wet palette.
After you had that first initial okay, I put paint on this is fucking fun,
check it out, see if you like it first, but then get a wet palette.
I'm still saying day one. if you're vaguely thrifty, but you'll see so much money.
But you also recommended two lights on day one, and I think that if you're just starting out, you can use your kitchen table light.
Yeah, go just to your kitchen table, go to your computer desk and just clear your keyboard and just put some paint on a thing.
Seriously, like two lamps is fancy? That's $10. I just
But I will say as someone, as a consumer whore as myself, a little bit of a consumer slut, the first initial model kit, like I snapped together, I was like, yeah, this is fun. Like, and then I caught the bug right after it.
Yep.
Doing that hobby shop trip when you're like, I'm going to buy a lamp, I'm going to buy this, I'm going to get this. That's when you get fucking excited and it's fun as fuck.
It's true. That's true.
Now I'm going to go buy a pal. I'm going to buy the other lamp. I'm going to buy this thing. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Like, you start getting really excited for it and you want to, it makes you fucking eager. It's like, I don't know. It's weird. I love that shit.
Well, that's when you become a miniature. I know you're younger than me, but like, how old were you when you first started messing with miniatures? Cause that's important here too.
I was like 20 something.
Okay. You were I was 15.
Yeah. So, that's the other thing too. If you have the money,
if somebody had told me, you know, that these are your brushes that you're going to want to use eventually when you figure it out, they're kind of expensive, but they're not the end of the world. But if somebody had told me $15 for a paintbrush when I was 15 years old, I would have lost my fucking mind. But
I think I was 12.
The lamp thing, it's like I said, it's literally like the starting equipment I recommended to you can be had for all of it for less than $20 for the everything you need to paint.
You can go to a flea market and probably get most of it cheap.
Yeah, seriously, it's just like you were saying, you can get a value pack of synthetic brushes at any craft store, Walmart, whatever, for, you know, under $5. You can get two desk lamps with daylight spectrum bulbs in them for less than $10 for the pair of those. Probably about $10 for the pair. Then you can get, you know, you can make a wet palette out of a sandwich tub and some paper for $2. And that's
Dollar Tree's the spot for that, because they sell desk lamps there for $1.
They're
not bad at all. They're pretty good, actually.
It's fine. Perfect. The point is that my starting gear that I recommended, 15-year-old me could have got.
Yeah, yeah. That's
true. Like if I'd known that that was everything I was going to need to paint for the foreseeable future while I figured it out, $20 wouldn't have been that dire of an investment. You know, like I shot my nerd budget for the year getting, you know, the big box of 40K stuff when I was a kid. But if I had been able to tell my folks I need another $20 to get everything I'm going to need to paint, they'd been like, fuck it. Okay, fine. But don't ask me for anything else. You know?
Yeah. That's the second ask there. It's like, oh, I need the just $20. No big deal.
And that would have been that, you know? Yeah. But
that's a good thing, though,
even though that seemed like a pile of stuff, it's all accessible. It's affordable. I didn't tell you to buy the fancy. Any one of those things can be stupidly expensive.
Oh yeah. Real quick.
Get the cheap while you're learning. You'll be fine.
And that's the cool thing about miniatures and even just scale modeling in general. It's pretty cheap to get into. And 9 times out of 10, you got half of the supplies sitting around your house.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Most of the time, you've got all you need to get started in your junk drawer.
Yeah, you probably have some craft paints in there too. Yeah.
usually there's some paints in there. Yeah.
Yep.
Or at least a rattle can or some shit laying around if you're doing Gundam shit.
Yeah. Right. Something. Yeah. You know?
So there's one more thing that we're going to need to talk about, and that is paint consistency. But before we do that, I kind of want to hit the Hall of Feasting because I'm getting a little bit hungry.
Oh yeah.
God damn, boy, I'm parched.
Are you getting hungry? You guys hungry? Yeah. I'm gonna grab a couple of meat.
I could do with a burger.
Yeah.
Fucking chips pop in a bar.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. All right. We're going to stop by the Hall of Feasting. We'll see you guys in just a minute. Hi. Welcome to the Great Hall of Feasting. This is where we tell you about companies that we like. And the first company that we like that we're going to tell you about is a little company called USA Gundam Store. Yeah, we're a miniatures podcast, sure. But you know what USA Gundam Store sells? Miniatures, for real. USA Gundam Store has miniatures, paints, paintbrushes, and I believe they sell wet palettes as well. If they don't, yours always the ham sandwich tub, right? So while you're over there, do what? Phil? You're in the Great Hall of Feasting?
I was agreeing with you. Oh. I'm never in the Great Hall of Feasting. But
no, I see you got your hamburger. Sorry. That's good.
Yeah, you got to at least get your burger.
Hell yeah, man. The Hall of Feasting's having a special on burgers today. The USA Gundam Store sponsored burgers. What are the so? I guess they're stamped or something. So at the beginning of this episode,
USA Gundam stamped your into the bun.
Yeah, it's scorched on there. We talked about SMS paint mixing bottles already. I don't think that SMS would recommend the use that I have of them.
But you know they make really nice paint? Apparently,
they do make nice paint. They make nice mixing bottles also. But I buy my SMS things at USA Gundam Store. So there's some synergy.
That's
here.
That's a double whammy.
Think about it. Right, miniatures, paint, hamburgers, and now mixing bottles that you can use for whiskey potentially, which is not recommended by the manufacturer. But honestly, like I said, as long as it works, SMS paints are lacquer paints, but they also go on very smoothly. And if you use them, I mean, they are airbrush lacquer. It's an acrylic.
Whatever that means. There's science and stuff.
There's science happening.
We got to do an episode about what the hell an acrylic lacquer is, right? Because that melts my brain every time I hear that phrase.
We need to talk about pigments.
I'm going to do some research.
Binders. And we need to talk about solvents. And I could do this lecture now, but right now the Great Hall of Feasting is getting kind of crowded.
Sorry.
And so did want to specify that SMS paints are very good for airbrushing. So if you reach the point in your miniature painting career that you want to start trying out airbrushing, SMS is the way to do that. And speaking of hamburgers, Holy Mountain Printing.
Yeah, brother, the feast of the best. Put two buns together and you go eat the rest. It's hamburger time.
We have nothing to do with old Macho Randy Savage, but we sell metal shirts and fucking weird model kits from Japan and Godzilla toys and B-movies from overseas. We have all kinds of fun shit. And that's right. That's right. Sponsoring my own podcast. What's good, son?
I'm normally pretty silent during the Great Hall of Sponsorship, but like, really, I did from Holy Mountain's Toy Vault. I did just pick up one of those tiny scope dogs that I've always wanted, and they actually had them stateside, which is pretty dope,
dude. So, they've got stuff.
Way to go, Toy Vault.
I stopped by Joel's house earlier today to drop off some resin and to pick up a 3D printer, but the key is I got a sneak peek of some stuff, and I got to tell you that it's going to be real good. It's going to be real good. So you should check out Holy Mountain. Deep.
pretty good.
Real spicy stuff. Pretty spicy.
I was excited about Tiny Scope Dog. I'm still excited about Tiny Scope Dog.
Tiny Scope Dog is so
cute. They're so cute. And guess what? You can paint them using the skills you learned from miniature painting.
I mean,
I did. Get us out of here. I've got diarrhea.
All right. Let's recap. We've covered a lot here, and there's a lot of new people.
I'm stuffed from that fucking great burger, burger.
The Great Hall of Feasting today was especially, it was
greasy.
It was extra
fucking greasy.
It wasn't greasy. It's usually pretty greasy. It got a little bit extra greasy today. I'm going to take a nap because that was quite a lot of feasting, and so let's do a recap before we fall asleep. Key items to remember. Number one. Local hobby store. If you've got one,
yes,
go there and learn what you can learn. Phil, what are the most important items that somebody who is first starting out should have?
Okay, there was a little bit of a challenge from everybody, but I say the most important things to have starting are just a handful of colors you like.
Yep.
Doesn't matter what brand, doesn't matter who made them. A couple of lamps, cheap desk lamps are great.
Hell yeah.
You want to cancel your shadows with those. Some cheap brushes because you don't know how to use nice brushes yet, so why spend money on them and ruin them?
Learn that brush control.
A rinse cup and a nice tidy area to work. It doesn't have to be permanent. It's great if it is, but you can do any of this on a card table, on a clean surface, anywhere. Yep. Like just somewhere that you can sit down, lay out your stuff and work comfortably.
Yeah.
And a wet palette. Which again, you can look up how to make your own. You can buy them for reasonable amounts, whatever. However you get one because it will save so much money for you.
I would say is like the golden rule of miniatures, which is what, Brandon?
The golden rule is thin your paints.
Thin your paints.
Thin your paints.
Thin your paints.
You got to thin it.
If you've ever painted miniatures and asked anybody how to get better at it, chances are that's the first thing they told you.
Thin your paints. Please thin your paints.
Which isn't terribly helpful until you understand why. And that is going to be, hopefully, the subject of the next one of these that we talk about is the ways to understanding the properties of your paint and how to make them work best for you.
Hi, I'm Brandon from the Premonition of Paint podcast, and I'm here to tell you to thin your paints.
If you want to actually hear what like that moment sounds like when you're like, oh shit, thin your paints works. I had that oha moment in the previous season, so go back and listen to that.
Yeah, man.
And you'll be like, oh shit, okay, that's definitely worth, thinning the fucking paints.
That really could be an entire episode. And so thin your paints, consistency and brush control is going to be another key. Like when you first start out, here's what you need to start. And then we'll talk about kind of like moving on to the intermediate level next time. We're going to do the same thing for the Cutting Mat podcast. These next seasons are going to be all about getting into the hobby. And then we'll get back to our normal kind of like meta discussion about the community and about all the different elements of the hobby. But we wanted to make sure we realized we've been doing this for a while and we never guided people in. We are the worst air traffic controllers ever.
Well, we have a cult, but it's just kind of, it's just there. Yeah,
it's fine. The cult's like, oh, well, when's the comet going to come back by? Like, I don't know, whenever.
Yeah, sure. Just hang out till then.
When are the alien overlords going to show up? Yeah, I don't know. They said they'd call. I don't know.
That'd be awesome. I know that we tend to kind of, plan it out a little bit and then just, decide in the last 30 seconds before we start yammering what we're going to do. But for somebody that was listening to these in series, if you are doing that, I'm sorry. But if somebody was doing that, then it'd make a lot of sense to go from this to properties of paint, because that's another thing that I kind of understood when I was getting started, just because I'd been like an art nerd my whole life up to that point. But there is a lot of specific stuff that would have helped me a ton if I'd known it earlier on.
Chemistry, man. I'm looking forward to some chemistry. We're going to hit up. We're going to dig deep into polymerization, and we're going to talk about the difference between drying and curing. That's going to be a good.
I still don't know that, so I'm here to learn because I'm I'm the new kid. You know, I'm getting picked on. Phil's got me about my ankles, getting a little lunch change out of there.
That's all I do.
I'm here for the ride. I'm here for the ride, which is good because I feel
I'm over in the corner, like I'm eating the Play-Doh. Like I don't know, like you guys,
Brandon's huffing.
You have your own thing, man.
He's trying to like he's huffing Elmer's glue, thinking something's going
to
happen.
I figured out how to paint. I don't even need paint, you huff enough glue, and you look at the many, and the colors just fall in place.
It just falls in place.
I'm pretty sure I can use SMS bottles to store whiskey.
Hell yeah, dude, you can. You can do that. I don't think this is not coming from Scott, but you can do that.
You can do it.
I'm saying it works, but Scott did not tell me to say this. I apologize, but SMS, fantastic mixing bottles, fantastic paints.
For all of you like new people listening out there, I'm kind of with you. I'm learning with you. So you have someone to kind of relate when it's like, okay, I'm kind of new. I don't fucking know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm doing either. It's great.
He doesn't know what he's doing, but he's really good. So, you know, watch what learn what he learns and do what he does.
Yeah, man, I'm really good at not knowing what I'm doing good.
He's on the fast track.
All I know is that I don't know. Yep.
I don't know anything.
I don't even think I know that I don't know, man. This is awful.
Get us out of here, Brent. Tell everybody who we are and where to find us and where we sleep.
We sleep in coffins. We actually recently relocated to an abandoned church right off of Interstate 3. It's the one next to that hole in the ground where the guy from Jeepers Creepers dumped those corpses. That's where we are.
Gentleman's Club Jiggles.
Jiggles went out of business. It's called Gigle now. It's a much classier joint.
It's a bakery.
It's delicious. The best pastries, and you know what that means. Yeah, so here we are. I'm Brandon. I do mechagenre.com, and on the Cutting Mat podcast, I use mechagenre as my Gunpla Instagram. There's two other people on this podcast, and I'm gonna let them fight over who gets to go next.
Not it.
Boom. Easy.
I'm Phil. I don't do anything. I just talk on this and hang out on the Cutting Mat Discord, which you should get on, and we'll talk about painting things anytime you want.
And that, of course, is that's a vast underrepresentation of what Phil does for that Discord. Phil is a painting expert. He helps everyone do everything on the Discord all the time. Phil knows everything. Phil Quite knows.
Literally. We don't need Google.
What I'm thinking right
now. I just like talk. I do know what you're thinking, but come hang out. If you got questions about paint stuff, I love to help. I will help. Then there's Joel.
Hey, that's me. I go online, but a lot of different names. but if you go to True Gunpla on Instagram, you can find all of them listed there for your convenience. Come and hang out on the Patreon Discord. If you are getting into miniatures and you don't know where to start and you want to kind of have in a sense like this safe community to show what you're doing, I would highly recommend our community. And I have a fuck ton of miniatures. I will send you some miniatures.
I can,
you gotta be careful saying that.
I can confidently say that on the air because I literally have hundreds and thousands of them. So please,
I just dropped off an old Iron Wind produced Ralpartha Velociraptor blister at Joel's today. What? Yeah,
that's dope. They have lightning coming out of their paws.
That's awesome. Fucking weird.
Lightning wizard raptors. That's what we have on the Patreon. So come hang out.
And they're antiques, effectively. Yeah. So the Cutting Mat Patreon is the place to go if you like t-shirts or art books and or stickers and or Discords and or us. So please join us. Let's just close with this advice for baking. Honestly, parchment paper, the best way to get the perfectly crispy underside with a nonstick application. Smooth. Yeah. You don't have to worry about your oil burning.
Chicken strips. You know? You don't even have to like be a fancy baker.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The good kind. Yeah. Even the good kind.
And you can use less oil. Like the real trick is if you're going locale, you can use less oil, whatever your roast vegetables. That's what I love it for. But hey, you know, everybody's different. And we're the most different of all. Yeah.
Especially if you're buying store-bought chicken fingers, like the good kind, like $8.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Parchment paper is the way to go.